Financial Services Authority is a body whose influence we only tend to come across when we're trying to open a bank account. The FSA has, though, a significant influence on the financial services sector, which generates over a third of Manx economic output, so we probably do need to know a bit more about them. The FSA talks in its recent report of a need for change. So what's driving that change, and how will the FSA shape the future of the Manx finance industry? Lillian Boyle, you're the chair of the board of the FSA. What's the difference between the FSA and the FSC that I think was the forerunner?
Yeah, Phil, basically there were two predecessor organisations. There was the Financial Supervision Commission, which you've just referred to, and there was also the Insurance and Pensions Authority. And in 2015, Tynwald decided that it would be very useful and probably a more modern approach to have a combined regulator, and therefore the decision was made at that point to create the Financial Services Authority. So we've been in existence for just over 8 years. We started on the 1st of November 2015.
And the scope of your organisation, I mean, it's quite large. The industries that you regulate have a massive contribution to the Manx economy, don't they?
Absolutely. I suppose what people sometimes don't realise is the extent of the breadth of the scope of the FSA, and that basically is wider financial services. So the classic areas that people would probably think of are banking and insurance, but we're also dealing with the fund services, trust and corporate services providers, various organisations that make up what we refer to, sorry, I'm about to go into an anachronism there, and do DNFPB.
So designated businesses.
Right.
So definitely we'll explain everything as we go through. So that is a really wide area. In addition, people sometimes don't realise that we also have an oversight of the accountancy profession on the island as well. So more or less any type of financial services that you will come into contact with in its widest definition will fall within our remit. But within that, and my colleagues here today, Bettina, Roz and Ian, will go into the detail of how we look after each of those kind of sectors in a different capacity. Because, you know, for some of them, we are the main regulator. For some of them, we are oversight in another anachronism, AML, anti-money laundering. So basically, we have lots of different roles that we're carrying out. They won't always be ones that are very evident to the public, but to the members of the financial services industry, they are probably much more aware of what we are doing and what we're working with them to try to ensure that we maintain really strong standards for the island, because we know that going forward, that is the key to success for the island's future.
And Bettina, then, I mean, you're the chief executive of the FSA, it's a huge area of responsibility, isn't it? And making sure, I mean, it's always difficult for a regulator to be popular with the industry that they regulate, but I imagine working with the industry is really quite important too.
Yes, it is, Phil. So we spend a lot of time, and again, my entire team, but I also spend a lot of time on collaboration, speaking to industry, and that can be at forums. We have a lot of industry associations, but equally at conferences or bilaterally, to really make sure that we are aligned and we understand that industry understands what the mandate is of the Financial Services Authority, but equally that we continue to be pragmatic and work with industry to make sure that together we can future-proof the island.
And as chief exec, what's the size of the FSA? How many staff have you got working for you?
So we're right now we're 86, but we are staffing up, and my colleague Ian will talk to that a little bit about the anti-money laundering efforts. We will be just under 100 team members, which is, relatively speaking, actually very, very small. Lillian touched on, you know, what the wide remit is, and to have such small workforce, we have to be so efficient and quite automated. And again, Roz will touch on the automation efforts that we're doing in order to meet that. If you put it in comparison, we have similar remits to the other Crown dependencies. Jersey FSC, for example, is now at 270 staff, and then Guernsey counterpart is about 130, 140 people. So we actually bring more GDP to our island compared to the size of what the FSA is.
And for those who don't know, the industries that you regulate represent around about a third of the Manx economy, which is quite a significant amount, and they are all dependent on you doing your job well, the international community recognising the standards that you set and saying that they are of a high standard, because without that regulation and without that international rubber stamp, many of the businesses that exist on the island wouldn't be able to operate, because they rely on that good name and the reputation, don't they?
So correct, Phil. That's exactly what we're trying to do. And I think sometimes it is hard for industry, or it is hard for consumers, when they have to bring, you know, quite a bit of paperwork to the, you know, the various service providers that they're using. But again, that is for us to ensure that we are meeting those very high international standards to make sure that the island is seen as a good and solid place to do business. And while, you know, at times it can seem onerous, we're here to assist to make sure that industry understands their responsibilities and, again, you know, does meet them, and equally for consumers, that they see that bigger picture, that while, you know, it can be more onerous to be asked for, you know, your passport or for your credentials by your service providers, but there is a bigger rationale for that, that we need to do that, and everybody globally has to do that. The Isle of Man is not unique in that sense. So it's a big job, but as I said, collaboration and being very efficient and pragmatic and risk-based is key to that.
And Ian, your role, of course, is anti-money laundering and CFT is mentioned here too, supervision. I'm not sure what CFT is.
Yeah, countering the finance of terrorism.
Right, okay. Gosh, so you're quite an important person.
He is.
No. Yeah, so it sounds very grand, doesn't it, Phil? So anti-money laundering, quite a common understood term around the world. But if you think of it as being... In the same way as people in the islands and businesses on the island have to wear of health and safety standards and health standards and tax standards, yeah, sanction standards, we have anti-money laundering standards as well. And they're designed and agreed by an organisation called the Financial Action Task Force, or FATF, as we call it in the trade. Hundreds of countries around the world are members of FATF and sign up to those standards. But the standards are there to try and encourage people to protect the countries from criminals, or worse, from infiltrating the financial sector predominantly and moving dirty or criminal money through. The Isle of Man is an international financial centre. We're a low tax country. And so there's an encouragement for good commercial and normal honest people to use the facilities in the island. But those facilities and safety are also tempting for criminals and worse. And as a big international financial centre, we have to try and protect ourselves from that dirty money coming in. But it's the same standard here as applies in the UK or America or Guernsey or Jersey or even in Hong Kong. So what we're trying to do is encourage businesses to be robust enough and resilient enough to try and prevent that money coming in. A bit like ill health. If a disease gets into your country and spreads, it's really difficult to control. So the more you can do to prevent it coming in and try and damp it down, the better. And that's principally what we're trying to do, either on the money laundering side or the terrorist finance side.
And of course, one of the few reasons that the Manx public generally would know about the FSA is effectively the front end of what you do, which is that people get really, really irritated at the fact that they have to go and prove who they are. And I've been on the Isle of Man all my life. I've been here for 50 years. And why am I having to prove that I'm who I am when I've been banking with this organisation for, I don't know, however many years? Do you understand those frustrations?
Oh, yes, because I have to do it as well. We have to go through the same process. It's really difficult. And I suppose the difficult thing for the FSA is that's the only bit of our work that the public generally see. So all the highfalutin stuff and things we do with international organisations or with the police or with others are really unseen there behind the scenes. But that front end, I'm afraid, is a necessary cost of what we're doing to try and make sure that the banks in particular know who they're dealing with and can identify and confirm who they're dealing with, just to make sure, one, that they know who it is, and then think about, is the business and the transactions that we're doing here normal for a person like that? That's all we're asking them to do.
And in essence, what you do, what this allows, is for people to use the banking sector, banking services on the Isle of Man, and be as reassured as they possibly can be that this is going to work and it's going to be safe, a safe place for their money.
Yeah, and hopefully, if they deal with the bank for a while, they'll have to do it once. You know, confirm your identity and prove it's you once. You shouldn't have to do it every time you go into the same bank. But yes, we understand it's a bit of a pain, isn't it?
Phil, as well, you mentioned the size of the industry that we regulate. So that does mean that there's a lot of people on the island who work in that industry who are very aware of what it is that we do. And I think people are also very conscious of the need for us to collaborate, as Bettina said, to ensure that we can attract new good business to the island. And I think, you know, some of that is really within Rose's area in terms of the way we've tried to work about innovation, and maybe she'd like to kind of highlight a few bits for us as well on that kind of area.
And certainly I was leaving what appears to me certainly the best of the titles to last. Roz, Head of Innovation. This sounds like a really exciting role. Well, tell us what sort of innovations that you're able to come up with.
Well, yeah, it is a really exciting role. And I know the team and the authority, we really enjoy working on our efficiencies and all the innovation. I think I'd probably describe it in sort of layperson's term as we innovate internally and we also innovate externally. So from an internal perspective, we're trying to create more efficient work practices so that our staff, albeit, you know, we're smaller than other Crown dependencies, we can then actually be more risk focused. So, for example, some of the things that we've done over the last number of years, and I'd say the last 5 years, we've made significant progress in our innovation. We've created an internal back office system, which is effectively a large database to collate all of our supervisory activity that we do regulating all of the sectors and the mandate that both Bettina and Lillian and Ian have obviously alluded to. And what that then enables us to do, having that data in one place, is to look at trends and then focus on areas that we feel might need a greater focus. So I think the principle is we don't look for risk if risk isn't there. We then use risk indicators to focus resources. So that's essentially the back office system. We've also got something called a data warehouse, which sounds very highfalutin, but it's basically, imagine a big paper filing cabinet. We've now got that electronically. And again, that helps us get data in from our regulated entities in a much more efficient fashion. Again, looking for trends and outliers. And that's been a significant development for us over the last number of years. And we're now really seeing the benefits of that work. So, and we also look at process improvements. So we've recently done a project which has been
culminated in the framework of something what we call the supervisory methodology. So building on the foundations of our infrastructure is now how staff approach supervision. And that, again, has been a very important project to us to help our supervisors understand how to look for risk, how to assess risk and how to record it. So that journey has been, long. There's been a huge amount of transformational change within the authority and our approach. And we're now in the embedding phase of basically a number of those projects. So that's sort of how we do it internally. And then our external element is very much focused with sort of Department for Enterprise and supporting initiatives that though the agencies have. So particularly the digital agency and the finance agency, who are both looking to attract great quality business to the island. And having the regulator and access to us, which is really one of our unique selling points, really can bring in and attract new business to the island. And that's something that we've really been working on over the last number of years.
And, of course, the best innovators in the industry are the people who try and move the dark money around. And you have to try, at least, and keep up with them. That must be quite a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's very much data and intelligence focus, which is, again, you know, the synergies we're getting from our back office system. And we've just implemented a brand new AML system, which should enable us to look at indicators. Now, that's not everything. And then Ian's team become heavily involved in actually using those indicators to try and identify weaknesses that we might have as a jurisdiction.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, Richard. So again, the world changes, doesn't it? You know, I mean, so 9/11 and the New York attacks really started to generate the interest in terrorist financing and efforts to prevent that funding floating around. The old days of bags of swag and cash are kind of long gone. Yeah, the world's moved on. People move money on social media platforms. Yeah, they move it electronically. They move it internationally. They're not physically moving the money anymore. So that dark money, as you described, has changed the way it's been moved. And the international controllers of money laundering are professionals at laundering money. So it's no longer the criminals trying to put the money into the bank. It's professionals moving the money through international jurisdictions, including international financial centres, to try and hide the audit trail and try to hide where it's gone. That continues to develop and innovate and change as we go through. So we need businesses to be informed, either on the risks or the methodologies or the typologies. And that's where the Financial Intelligence Unit in the island is key to feeding that information out into the industry. We support that by also cascading the same information and trying to make sure that the financial sector and the designated business are all meeting the minimum standards set by our codes to protect themselves from that money coming in. Because I said, once it gets established, it's more difficult to shake off. So the idea is to try and defend and protect from that money coming in. But if you do spot it, to actually flag it to the FIU, and then the constabulary can generally take action if appropriate.
Sorry, Phil, if I might just add, one of our key functions is also the role of gatekeeper. So we have a very robust application process. So either for individuals, again, for new applicants, and again, that's why Roz mentioned the early involvement with new businesses. If they need to be regulated, we start that dialogue on what is needed, what standards are needed to make sure that they can meet that regulatory hurdle. Because as Ian said, if criminals are not even allowed to do business here or work with a regulated firm, then, you know, we're really protecting the island and making sure that we have strong controls.
We are slightly unusual in having our chief executive as a board member as well.
Right.
So I suppose you could describe us in kind of corporate governance terms as being a unitary board where you have both an executive director and a majority of non-executive directors on it. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it, the role of the board. And we're a statutory board, which I know a lot of people will recognise as a term that applies elsewhere in the format used by government in terms of the way that both regulators and authorities are set up. So the role of the board is really to set out with the executive the strategy for how we manage our role as a regulator and how we will encompass, potential future risks. We look at the changing environment that's surrounding us, and along with the executive and led by Bettina, we will really try to develop the right strategic direction, which really gives confidence to the finance sector by providing effective regulation.
And one of the big challenges that the FSA faces, of course, is when international bodies come over to the island and Moneyval is due a visit. Who is Moneyval and what are they going to be looking at? I don't know, Bettina?
I can start.
You can start, yes, carry on.
So Moneyval is the regional body, as I said, Ian had talked about the Financial Action Task Force, and then there's regional organisations that oversee anti-money laundering and countering the financing of terrorism. So obviously being in Europe, Moneyval is the body that is responsible for us. And listeners might recall back in 2016, we had the fifth round of evaluation for the island. And there was a number of strands that still needed to be built out. We're now preparing for the sixth round. We don't have an exact date yet, late 2025, maybe early 2026. But the focus will be much more on effectiveness. As I said, people might recall the last round was really sort of on technical compliance, and the Isle of Man did, you know, extremely well in that regard. We have 39 out of 40 as positive markers, as we call it. But effectiveness is much harder to showcase. Moneyval will want to see 3 to 5 years of effectiveness, meaning that all the rules and regulations that are in place, how have firms, how has the Isle of Man embedded that and can really show the results to deter anti-money laundering. So maybe I'll stop there and Ian, you'll jump in.
Yeah, so just go. So Moneyval is a regional organisation. It's one of a few regional organisations who are members of FATF. If you imagine, FATF would deal with the largest countries and do their own inspections. For smaller countries, we tend to have regional bodies, so whether it's an Asia-Pacific group or Moneyval, who do a lot of the smaller European ones. So Moneyval have been in Jersey recently on site, and they're due to be in Guernsey soon as well. But their function, like FATF's, is just to come and test how we meet the standards of both the technical, legislative and controls that you have, and how effective they are. And the challenge for all the countries at the moment is that expectation of effectiveness is much higher than it was in 2016. The actual standards haven't changed, but the testing of it has become much tougher. So nothing new. It's not like the Olympics where we train everyone to get ready for that one race. These are standards that we're really expecting to be applied all of the time. But as you can imagine, with the expectation of Moneyval coming, we're looking at everything we do. All the agencies are doing that. We are working together. So coordinated by the Cabinet Office AML policy team, all of the agencies in Ireland, whether it's the constabulary or the regulators or DfE, are all kind of working together to look at how all the pieces fit together, make sure they fit together properly, and where they don't, take some action. And the same applies to business, because that effectiveness test is not a test of the regulators. It's a test of the island as a whole, including how the financial sector and the designated business could show that their protections are effective as well. So we're asking businesses again to look again at all their pieces now, how they fit together, make sure they're working. And that's a real challenge. And like all these things, we're looking at it forensically. We're looking at it with a critical eye. And that means there's an awful lot of work going on across the piece as we speak, trying to make sure we're ready for that inspection.
And government is often criticised for having plenty of offices with shiny desks and computers and the ability to do various things, but perhaps not being effective in doing them. And maybe it would be a good idea to have Moneyval doing an assessment of several of the departments of government. But it's quite well, as you say, it's a different thing, isn't it? Having the resource and having the people is one thing, but actually knowing which direction you need to be focused on and it being able to demonstrate that you've actually achieved what you're there for. I suppose it's quite a difficult thing to do if we're talking about dealing with dark money, dodgy money, as it might may have been called. The very nature of it is people don't know where it is, and being able to demonstrate that you've actually found it and that you know that you're on top of it must be difficult to do.
That's why it's a really challenging area for everybody, because if it's obvious that it's dark money, you would expect people to say no and to stop it. Yeah, the smarter they are at moving around, or the more complex the arrangements there are, the more difficult it is to spot. And that's why we need the industry to be at a high standard, to have the knowledge and the understanding and the wherewithal to look at those things and say, actually, there might be more risk in here than we thought, and do a bit more to check it. As the regulator, you know, the supervisor, we also have to show that we're doing enough to support, encourage, influence, change behaviours to make sure people reach those standards. But those challenges have always been there. The challenge of getting the right people in is a big one on the island. You know, if those businesses are going to deliver against the standards, they need to have the right people with the right skills in the right places. Yeah. As the regulator, we need to have the right people with the right skills in the right places. We have a common challenge of making sure that we're continually bringing people in and developing them, or bringing in expertise to make sure that we can deliver against that. But the effectiveness test is a difficult one. Yeah. Trying to prove that things don't exist is actually more difficult than proving that they are and you've dealt with them. And so in many ways, as a small jurisdiction, we have to do as much work and cover a lot of ground on evidencing and exploring areas to show that we don't have issues, as well as actually showing that we've dealt with the ones where we actually have obvious issues.
I think it's also really important to understand that we do a lot of work with industry all the time. There's a lot of outreach. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of development that goes on through discussion with industry to understand how they will manage the requirements which are coming from the regulation. But I think one of our kind of defining principles is really that we've always got to be proportionate in the way that we manage the regulation, for industry to be able to adhere to it, and also still to be able to thrive. And that's a really important aspect for us, that we consider, you know, through the dialogue that we have with industry, how we can best achieve the implementation of the standards. I think that is a key one, isn't it, Bettina?
Absolutely. And you know, that's why we're risk-based. We're focusing on the areas that, you know, are highest risk. And obviously, right now we're talking about money laundering. But again, if there's a small business and they have low-risk customers, we don't expect as much due diligence and protocols around that. If there is a firm, it might be small, but if their risk appetite is high-risk customers, then we do expect, and the international standards do expect, they have to have enhanced due diligence. They really have to make sure, to Ian's point, do they know those customers? What are they bringing in? Why do they want to do business here on the island? So it is, you know, we try to be quite proportionate, you know, pragmatic where we can. But as I said, certain things, we just need to make sure that the island is protected.
And 10 years ago, internet banking, certainly for most domestic customers, was a relatively new thing, wasn't it? Then particularly during the COVID period, where people were less eager to go out into public places, there was a big shift to online banking. Presumably that has impacted to some extent on the work that you do as well. What sort of changes have come about as a result of that?
So clearly nowadays customers really expect what we call omni-channel, that everything is available to them. So again, it changes the business models of the banks. We have to look at, you know, for example, cyber risk. Is that something that the institutions that we regulate, you know, protect themselves adequately from? So clearly the complexity, and hence the annual report is based on transformation, the complexity is increasing. International standards are increasing. The world, you know, we had all hoped after COVID things go back to normal, whatever that was. you have war in Europe, we have conflict in the Middle East, we have the cost of living crisis. So the new normal is really this. And Lillian touched on that horizon scanning to make sure that we know what's around the corner, what is coming up. And as I said, as a small organization, everybody is, we are always stretched. So if you're not smart in terms of what we're taking on, where we actually want to focus on with innovation, and again, that proportionality in terms of saying we focus on the highest risk ones, we won't be successful. And it's the same for our institutions. They make business decisions in terms of looking at footprint, the offerings that they provide, because as I said, they're commercial enterprises and need to make sure that they can continue to be successful and meet the expectations of the customers.
So I'm guessing Roz, as head of innovation in a rapidly changing environment, your role is very much needed.
Absolutely. And it was created, I think, 3.5 years ago, specifically to focus on efficiencies internally and also external outreach. So I'd say it is an essential role. And I mean, with the benefit as well, we work across all divisions in the authority. So we have touch points in every division, assisting them and being more efficient and helping them sort of progress and be better supervisors. But I think going back to the point about making us a viable jurisdiction for the future and protecting what we have, it's also then engaging externally with a lot of our industry bodies, our members, especially when we're making change to how they interact with us. We've done a huge amount of outreach and trying to help people understand the changes that we are implementing internally to bring people on the journey, so they understand where we sit. But I think also, I think as I said before, the helping Department for Enterprise and the expansion of the jurisdiction with good and sound business, that's something we've been heavily focused on supporting. And one such sort of example is the FinTech Innovation Challenge, which is in its second year now of running. And that effectively, that has had some global outreach. So last year there was 80 applicants, of which they touched in something like 8 or 9 international jurisdictions from as far as wide as Hong Kong, Singapore, and mainland Europe. And what that's trying to bring is sort of enablers who have solutions which are innovative that our financial services sector might want to utilise. And it helps them then transform their businesses also. So we've played quite a supporting role in that. And assisting, it's the digital agency and the finance agency who are leading this particular challenge. And I think that's been a really important step forward for us as a jurisdiction. And actually, it's globally put our name out there as a good place to do business, as an innovative jurisdiction who are willing to embrace change, which, of course, is something, you know, post-COVID that everybody's having to adopt. And I think we're trying to accelerate that for the jurisdiction and make us a better place to do business.
And of course, that is really important, isn't it? You've got to have differences, I suppose. Everyone has exactly the same standards, exactly the same ideas, then people will go to the most convenient place. And the Isle of Man, whilst it's the most convenient place to me, I suppose to people who live in other parts of the world, it may be less so. How do you keep being a really attractive place to come to do financial business? I don't know who would be the best to answer that. Bettina?
I can start. So Ross touched on that, is really making sure that we're open to new ideas, to sound ideas, and again, innovative ways. We have such a strong base here, as I said. The financial services sector is you know, very mature and very established. So for us to build on that, helping established firms being more innovative or using plug-in, service providers that they can make their roadmap more digital, and equally, obviously, new providers. So that helps. Again, the maturity and the good reputation of the island. As I said, we are OECD compliant. So that's our tax colleagues make sure of that. We have a number of strengths here on the island. And I think, again, what we're working very closely with government across and industry is we need to shout a little bit more about that. The Manx culture is very lovely. We're very fond of achievements and as I said, high performance. Where we're not doing as much or have not traditionally done as much is actually letting everybody know about that. So international outreach is quite big on our list. And again, this is Cabinet Office, together with the other agencies. We're looking at that to make sure that people actually understand what our USP is, what are we known for. And as I said, the fact, low taxes, a very stable and compliant regulatory environment, a very skilled workforce, as I said, really in certain industry sectors, second to none when it comes to that expertise. Again, the very pragmatic and open approach, as I said, Department for Enterprise really assists businesses, to relocate here onto the island. So we have a lot that we're bringing to the table. I think what we collaboratively can do a little bit better on is actually letting the world know about those advantages.
I think, Phil, as well, that one of the key things, and you would expect me to say this as the chair of the authority, is that I really believe the team make themselves accessible to people. So for people coming to talk to us about setting up here or existing organisations who want to do change, then the authority through Bettina and the team need to be accessible to have those dialogues. And that's a really strong commitment that was made when we started out being the FSA, that would really be a major driver for us. And that accessibility can be a real differentiator for us as a jurisdiction, because people can get to talk to the regulator alongside talking to the Department for Enterprise and the financial and digital agencies, to Roz's point. So you're really building the whole package that people get to speak to all the decision makers in a very streamlined manner. And it does really help when people want to put their applications in because they've had that dialogue.
And as a board member, you will undoubtedly know what the industry thinks about how the FSA operates. I mean, what is the general feel, would you say, from the industry towards the FSA?
Well, as Bettina alluded to earlier, we have had a survey, which, is the second time we've gone out and done the survey with industry to get back their views on us. And, you have to take the good and the bad altogether. You have to be willing to accept that, as all organisations do, that you've got to learn and you've got to develop. I don't think that we would ever pretend otherwise. And so we've had the survey. Tina's mentioned we've published the actions that we're going to take on our website, and we will follow through and we will continue to have the dialogue with industry to manage and their expectations of us as a regulator, but also to continue to put forward the reasons why we have to do some of the things that we have to do. And it is a dialogue, and it would be very silly to pretend that there aren't tensions from time to time. You are a regulator at the sort of, by the very name, as you mentioned early on, that's always going to be there. But at the end of the day, if we're working for the same success story in terms of the island and attracting business and having a really good reputation, then I believe that we can actually succeed when we work together. And working together is the key to this.
And Is change, I think this was alluded to earlier, but is change just kind of an inevitable part of the future? Every year you're going to be undergoing significant change, or do you think that at some point the world is going to settle down and we're going to get back into a more relaxed phase of life?
So I don't have a crystal ball, but I do think the last few years have shown, and again, if you look forward, just the current, geopolitical tensions and where we are globally, I think that the speed of change, and again, the change itself, is only accelerating. So we have to be prepared for that, and hence really that transformation and future-proofing ourselves by being nimble, being responsive, again, as Lillian alluded to, collaborating and listening to what industry is saying and what they pick up and what they would like to see, for example, let's see, in new products and areas maybe where we can expand our remit. So that, I think, will not change. Equally, what we have to do, again, budgets are finite, so we have to manage within, you know, the footprint that we have. So again, how can we do things more efficiently, more innovative, smarter? Are there certain things where maybe we should do less of? So I think that continues, but I think it would be short-sighted to think, oh, you know, things have happened, quite a bit has happened, and maybe there will be more stability again, both internationally and regionally. But again, from what we're seeing right now, I don't expect that, and we have to prepare ourselves for that.
And as far as the future is concerned, you know, a third of the Manx economy depends on you doing your job right and getting the right balance between ensuring that you can demonstrate that you are effective as a regulator, but not being so regulatory that you end up stifling business. That's quite a challenge, isn't it?
It is. And I think the other part, and we had touched on it a little bit also through the industry survey, transparency. You had mentioned, how do you know how are you, you know, if you are successful? So we have responded to the industry survey. Transparency, the wish for greater transparency was one of the themes that came out of it. So we actually have just this week, we're putting KPIs, key performance indicators, on our website so that everybody can see what are we actually working on. What are some of the number of, for example, fitness and propriety assessments that we do? I had talked about that gatekeeper role, just to see the sheer volume, because I think sometimes there isn't that very thorough understanding of all the different things we do. Again, Lillian touched on, you know, the outreach activities. So again, we track that, and we're quite active both domestically as internationally. So again, just being very responsive and to make industry and everybody to understand what, you know, what do we work on and exactly how do we measure that success? Because as I said, having a stable, well-regulated environment is so key. But as I said, how can we best do that?
One of the things which has come out over the years as well is the value that industry puts on having a good regulator, because it makes it easier to do business if you come from a well-regulated environment, and therefore having that aura around the Isle of Man is a very important aspect for the people who are going out there to develop a business. And I think that's something that is acknowledged by industry, and it's something we always have to continue to provide the right type of regulation for our industry to be successful, but also to be recognised as being well regulated.
Ian, I'm guessing you can't give us all the details about how you go about doing your job, but what are the sort of the core sort of principles that you're asking the industry to look at when they're dealing with large sums of money? What kind of things should they be looking out for?
Everything we do as the supervisor under anti-money laundering is set out in the codes for the island. Now, every country's got regulations or codes that are very similar, and they set out the minimum standards of what businesses need to do. The key to it, however, is the risking side. So in order to establish that your customers are high, medium or low risk, you have to do the risking side. So an understanding of your business, which only the business really has a depth of knowledge on. What does your business do? Who it's involved with? What kind of trades it does? What its risks are, is really what the business needs to concentrate on. If they get that right, the rest of it can fit in. If they get that wrong, it's really difficult then to show and actually protect yourself from that. So we do focus a lot on the risk assessment elements of what a business does, whether that's the entire business risk or individual risks of customers, and making sure that they keep up to date with that. Generally, if businesses get that right and evidence it, actually have it recorded, then the rest of it is much easier to fit in. The simplest thing that we'd ask businesses to fix is make sure you've got your records in through. The biggest weakness we find is people say, well, I've done all that, but they can't evidence it to us. So how do we approach it? We look at the risk. We're looking at the size and the shape and the complexity of the businesses. Ross has talked about a data-led operation on that. We get returns every year where businesses tell us how big they are, what kind of countries they deal with, what kind of transactions they do. We use that analytically to try and build cohorts of businesses, and from that we look and say, well, that kind of business is generally higher risk than the others, and look at the individual business and databases to work out which ones are the highest risk. The higher risk businesses will get more attention.
And I suppose there's an inevitability that if you want to make a lot of money, higher risk is a bigger opportunity than the fairly mundane stuff that will give you a tiny return.
I said earlier about bags of cash no longer being the thing. So a lot of the cash-based criminality, which they still have in the UK, with bags of drugs money being carried around, we don't generally have that on the island, but we have got international financial flows in and out of the banks, the insurance companies, and the trust and company service providers. And that's where, if you're going to hide your money, in the old days, you hid your dirty swag amongst big cash businesses. Yeah, the bigger the better. It was easier. In international finance, if you want to hide your dirty money, you want to hide it where the big money is. Yeah. So the banks have to be aware of that, both as a direct supplier of services to people or as a supplier of services to TCSPs. And so the risking in there and the activity in there is really quite difficult for people, but that's why we need the businesses to understand what they're doing and to protect themselves and be aware of the complexity and the risk of the transactions that they're dealing with, whether that's direct or through three jurisdictions before it comes here.
And if I may, because you mentioned obviously, high risk could be more attractive because it could have, higher profitability. Again, there's nothing inherently wrong with wanting to take on higher risk businesses. It is just that the controls have to be commensurate to that risk. So the expectation would be, yes, it's a higher profitability, but there will be some more costs that will need to be spent on the compliance to make sure that, again, as a business, you can be comfortable that those higher risk customers are not unsavory and you're doing good business. So it's perfectly fine to choose that business model. What obviously as a regulator causes us difficulties if you take on high risk customers and then you don't have the commensurate compliance. And that's when Ian's team comes out and looks after you and potentially enforcement, because obviously that's not right. You're taking on higher risk and you don't know where that source of funds or source of wealth from those clients are coming from. And that's what we need to protect from, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Lillian, sadly, we are almost at the end of the programme, but just a bit of crystal ball gazing, if you will. 10 years' time, where would you hope that the authority will be?
Well, I think it probably goes back to what Bettina has said, that we want to ensure that we have future-proofed the authority such that it can deal with the changing environment. And you yourself said, will change keep going? I honestly believe it will. It will be different types of change. We haven't had time this morning to talk about, what will be the implications for AI coming on, artificial intelligence. That will be another challenge, whereby regulators have to widely understand how AI will be used in terms of consumers for financial products actually being able to get the right product. How will that play out? So I think there's a lot of change that's still got to come through, and I think we've got to Bettina's point again, we've got to be agile on this, we've got to work with industry, we've got to work with government, and it all comes back down to collaboration, which is really where we believe is the foundation for the success of trying to work with the industry and government to succeed for the island.
That was Lillian Boyle, Chair of the FSA Board, Bettina Roth, FSA Chief Executive, Ross Lynch, FSA Head of Innovation, and Ian Spence, Head of Anti-Money Laundering and Combating the Financing of Terrorism Supervision at the FSA. What do you think? Does the FSA provide suitable oversight and regulatory control over the finance sector? Is its bureaucracy overburdensome and stifling growth in the sector, or the necessary evil required to reassure investors and the international community that the Isle of Man is a safe place to do business? For now, I'm Phil Gorn, Goramayos and Geishakram. Thanks for listening.